Welcome to Shake It and Disturbed, everybody. I am Darren Karp here with John Thrasher. Hello to the YouTube and Patreon gods out there as well. We are on video and we always like to see you guys. I was literally just drenched from rain, so I had to switch my sweatshirts. So I'm wearing something a little bright and summery and springy for you there. Look at this. I have no neck. Look at this, John.
I love it. It looks gorgeous. Like everybody, everyone on Patreon and YouTube is getting somewhat flashed.
Oh, yeah. Any like fun, good parts to it. But
the good parts. Yeah. By the way, we do have to keep now that we're on YouTube, we do have to be careful with like how we say things. You know, we got to be a little more careful with we don't want to demonetize any of our YouTube videos before we even get it started. So,
well, we do want to thank all the subscribers who have already subscribed. We really appreciate it. Obviously, we're going to give a bunch of shout outs at the end of the show. So make sure you're listening to that for that, John.
Right.
I kind of want to get into this week's case.
Let's get right into it. We're not wasting anyone's time. That's true.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so on July 13th, 1985, a young mother by the name of Carolyn Muncie disappeared from the home she shared with her husband, Hubert, and their two young children. Now, Carolyn, I'm going to say Carolyn. I believe that's Carolyn, not Caroline.
Yeah, no, Carolyn for sure. Yeah.
Carolyn and Hubert, Hubert. You guys didn't hear this.
Really cute cat name. Hubert.
Oh, that is a cute cat name. Right. Before we started the show, Darren and I were talking about how sometimes, like when we're on air, we'll say names and words sometimes a little bit weird.
And we get stuck on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a tennis player, a French tennis player named something Hubert. And every time I see the name Hubert, I want to say Hubert because I've said his last name that way. So I'm going to try to make sure I say Hubert, although maybe it is Hubert. Who knows?
Do they spell it the same way? Is Hubert the same as?
Yeah. Mm. Isn't that interesting?
I just have a feeling because it's Carolyn Muncie and it takes place in Tennessee that it's Hubert.
That's probably Hubert.
But I don't know. Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to go with Hubert for today's purposes. But Carolyn and Hubert had started their family young. She was only in her late 20s, and her children were already 8 and 10 years old by this time. But this was far from uncommon in Tennessee. Latrell is what it was, the town that they lived in, which was a small town with a population of less than 1,000 people. It almost doesn't get much smaller than that, you know?
Yeah.
The eldest Muncie child, 10-year-old Laura, later told investigators that she'd awoken sometime after her mother put her to bed that evening and heard Carolyn speaking to someone who sounded a bit like her grandfather, and that the guest frankly, had brought some bad news. Mm. Hubert was out that night visiting a friend, Hubert, who lived in the neighborhood. And according to Laura, the unknown visitor told Carolyn that Hubert had been in a car accident, quote, down by the creek. Now, listen, I'm from Western Maryland.
Right. Everything's down by the fucking creek to me.
Everything's down by the creek. I mean, Maryland isn't like a southern state per se. You don't think of it as a southern state, but
Southern Maryland is.
Southern Maryland definitely would. Yeah, I would say definitely is. But Western Maryland, where I'm from, it's up in the mountains. We're Appalachian by nature. So down by the creek is another, like not even creek, the creek is very,
that feels
something I've
not
heard.
Yankee though. That feels yes. South of the Mason-Dixon. Yeah. Hillbilly, which is more, and I mean that with love and affection. Like I think that's more Southern than any like Northern.
Yes.
Like it's a lot Southern debutante, but it's not Northern elite, right? Which is how people view it. And there's obviously a mixture in between, but it feels distinctly Southern, even if we're going to argue that it's not technically down the South.
No, totally. And like I said, this, you know, there's a town near where my hometown is that's just on the outskirts of it that has a creek that runs through it, and everyone calls it the Crick. So it's just very Appalachian in nature, and I like
very Appalachia. Yeah.
Yeah. And Tennessee, of course, right in the dead center of the Appalachian Mountain Range. So there you go. But anyway, Laura then heard her mother sadly begin to cry and quickly rush out of the house. Now, the young girl was understandably upset. And when Carolyn didn't return, she and her younger sibling visited some of the nearby neighbors' homes looking for their father. The children didn't find Hubert and returned home to wait for their parents. Hubert arrived back home at around 9:30, and when he was unable to find Carolyn himself, he brought his children back to the neighbor's house and called up a few friends and relatives to help search for her. The following afternoon, at around 3 p.m., two members of the unofficial search party happened to see a man walking along the bank of a creek roughly 100 yards from the Muncie's home. That man was 23-year-old Paul Gregory House.
Interesting that he just, like, the children are running out to go look for Hubert. Then he comes back at 9:30. Then he can't find Carolyn. So, like,
where's everybody been, you know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, where is everybody? Because Carolyn was around, and then all of a sudden she seemed to miraculously kind of disappear. Now, Paul was fairly new to the area. That's Paul Gregory House. In March of 1985, he was released from prison in Utah, where he'd been incarcerated on charges of aggravated sexual assault. After leaving prison, Paul moved to Latrell to live with his mother and stepfather while he got back on his feet. Just a few weeks later, he moved in with a girlfriend, Donna Turner, who lived about 2 miles from the Muncies. I know a Donna Turner.
You do?
I do.
Is it this woman? Is she of this age, potentially?
I guess it would. I don't know how Paul. I don't know how old Paul is yet, but potentially. I don't think this is her, though.
All right.
I don't think she's from Tennessee.
TBD.
So he moves in with Donna in Tennessee, just 2 miles from the Muncies, like I said. The two search party members saw Paul wiping his hands on a dark cloth as he emerged from the bank of the creek and walked towards his white Plymouth. Okay, that's noticeable, but that's nothing, really.
I was going to say, especially if you're walking from a creek, you know, that's normal. You're drying off, you're cleaning off the mud. I mean, listen.
Exactly, you picked up something.
I have experience with Appalachian Creeks, okay? I'm the Appalachian Creek expert on the show today, all right?
Right, exactly. This is kind of a messy environment, so.
Let me tell you something. My grandfather, who grew up in the town I was just referencing that has the creek, one of the messiest, dirtiest guys, loves to tinker on old cars and trees and dirt. It's a thing, trust me.
Yeah, well.
Could never be me, but yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So there were two search party members, and then they saw Paul. And the three of them actually spoke pretty briefly. And the party members just explained that they were searching for Carolyn. And I'm assuming asked Paul, have you seen her? What's going on?
Right.
And Paul drove away, and the searchers became just a little sus of the stranger and went down to the area by the creek where they thought he may have come from. As they scoured the area, they discovered Carolyn's lifeless body hidden beneath some bushes along the creek. She was still dressed in her nightgown, a house coat, and had underwear on. Mm. Okay. Which says to me maybe that foul play in terms of raping didn't happen because normally underwear wouldn't be on the body. Now, granted, that's not definite. You certainly can still move it aside, have sex. So I don't know if this was like a cover up, but it does feel like she was dressed as if she like went out to get the paper and just never came back.
Yeah. Yeah. Sad,
it was clear
but
to It was clear to investigators that she had been badly beaten in the last moments of her life, and her body was covered in blood and bruises as though she had struggled and fought against her attacker. Carolyn's body also showed two potentially fatal injuries. Okay, she had been struck hard in the head and also appears to have been strangled. Examiners later determined that the blow to her head would have caused Carolyn to lose consciousness and her brain to hemorrhage. So she was bleeding out, essentially. If she hadn't died during the struggle, she likely would have succumbed to the brain bleed within about an hour or two. And although the medical examiner was unable to determine whether Carolyn had been raped during attack, they did find spots of semen on her nightgown and underwear. So tough to say if she was raped, like I said. Better sign that she had underwear on, but that doesn't mean that she wasn't sexually assaulted and doesn't mean that he didn't do something to her, just if there wasn't insertion. So I want to make that pretty clear. And there could have been insertion is my point, but we don't know that yet. The medical examiner was also able to narrow down her time of death to roughly 9 to 11 p.m. on the night of the 13th.
Hubert
came home at 9:30. Sorry, just want to keep the timeline.
No, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Well, investigators spoke to Carolyn's husband, Hubert, who informed them that he had been out of the house visiting a neighbor when his wife went missing. What is with guys always out visiting the neighbors? Like, I know that's not I don't want to like stereotype, but it's like we've heard so many times on the show, like the guy's out visiting the neighbor and he's just having a drink in the backyard. And it's like, no, we know what you're up to, especially in the 80s. I feel like in the 80s, the neighbor visits were always nefarious in nature, but maybe that's
men would have any excuse not to just like be at home with their wives and chilling. That's the theme.
I hate to say it, but it's true.
That's the theme, you know? That's the theme.
It's sad, but true. Well, anyway, although Hubert admitted he and Carolyn had been having significant difficulties with their marriage to the point where his wife was even considering leaving him, investigators didn't delve too deep. Hubert was not a viable suspect as far as police were concerned. Huh, interesting. Police were, however, extremely eager to speak with Paul House, who admitted he'd been in the area where Carolyn's body was discovered, but claimed he to be totally unaware of its presence.
Well, so far, let me just break this down. Hubert would potentially have an alibi, right?
Right. If
they went to the neighbor and they were like, yeah, he was with us having a beer. He potentially has an alibi. And also, if you're in Mr. Creek expert over here, Mr. Expert Crick over here, I mean, in theory, how many hikes have you probably done where you're walking by a body and you don't even know?
I think
maybe
about
a lot
it all
more
the time.
Than you fucking think. Right. Maybe a lot. You know, it especially in a creek, it's a wooded area. Well, I mean, right, though?
Yeah, no, it's true.
So that doesn't really, it's sussy, and I would interview him, but that could really just be circumstantial. It wasn't like it was just in the flat-out desert where no one else was. I mean.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you about the time where I was on a bike ride, and I was, like, making a TikTok about all the true crime, like, things that I could tell were happening on this trail. And then like, I ran into jeans. Like I was like riding my bike and it was just like a random pair of jeans. And I was like, oh, jeans. Okay. And then it was like a garbage bag. And I was like, I don't like where this is going.
Yes.
I decided to not tamper with evidence and kept on going. But thoughts and prayers to
whatever
that was.
This isn't Stand By Me where you're going to look for the actual body. But yeah, crazy.
No. Well, anyway, Paul flat out denied having any involvement in Carolyn's death and told police that he'd been at home with his girlfriend throughout the previous evening. As it turned out, Paul was acquainted with both Hubert and Carolyn and told police that he was actually in the area looking for Hubert. He'd heard that Carolyn was missing and wanted to offer his condolences, if not his help with the search.
So already, before we move on, this seems a little crazy because Paul ran into two searchers. And if the searchers explained that they were looking for Carolyn, don't you think Paul would have been like, oh weird, I'm actually looking for her husband right now.
Right. Right. I mean, that's what you would think. But again, it's the 80s. I don't know. I keep going back to the 80s. I don't know. But
I love that we're like giving excuses. It's like, people didn't communicate in the 80s.
I mean, no, but I mean, you know, to
they
some degree.
They could barely speak English in the 80s. You know, they were all over the place in the 80s.
Listen, you know, to some degree, I hate to say it. It's quite a different time now, you know, than compared to now. But nonetheless, during his conversation with the police, Paul appeared to also have scratches and bruises on his arms. Now, do we see where this might be going?
Mm-hmm.
When he was asked about them, he claimed he'd gotten them earlier in the week. Police asked about the clothing he'd worn on the night of July 13th. Paul informed detectives that he'd slept in his clothes the previous night and was still dressed in the same clothing that he had worn the night before. I guess that's not too suspicious and too sus, but it also doesn't help his case at this point either. Detectives then paid a visit to Paul's girlfriend, Donna Turner, who's also friends with Darren, who told them she hadn't noticed any scratches or bruises on her boyfriend's arms before the previous evening. So Donna's like, I don't know that. I don't know what's going on with that.
And I like how that seems honest, just knowing what we know, because it's just like you're just asking a question and she just wants to give the proper answer. You know, if she'd been like, I don't know, maybe that would have felt like partially a cover up. But the fact that she's like, no, I never fucking noticed that. And I would have feels super honest to me.
Yeah, I agree. Well, she also told them that the jeans he wore on the night of July 13th were actually at the bottom of a clothes hamper in their home. She retrieved the jeans and brought them to the detectives for testing.
Snitches get stitches, but Donna ain't playing.
Donna Turner, she's a real one for that. That's amazing. Darren, before we go on to the rest of this episode, we want to take a quick little break here and tell you guys about Patreon. I know this is a little bit of a new format for us, but we wanted to make sure you guys know.
Patreon perks.
We have brand new perks available on Patreon. We just updated them about a month ago. We just finalized. We're so excited. This is part of the
reason
really
we actually so excited about this.
We just finalized our 2023 perk. I've been working on some art is all I'll say for now. That's your little hint, although that's not a good hint. I'll be honest with you.
My mom's involved a little bit. That's a right. hint.
And here are Zoe's notes.
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, you guys.
It's not time for the Zoe's notes you yet, guys, but you know.
Have to sign up now and get 3 years of bonus content if you're looking for... You're missing some content. You're a little bored. This is the place to come for our 3 years of bonus content. Sign up for as little as $5 a month or cheaper if you actually sign up annually. It's a great deal and it's 100% worth it.
That's right. And Sussy Radishes on Patreon get the audio and the video version. Hi, we're waving at you guys right now of the show several days earlier. So you're getting that. You're getting all kinds of bonus content. We're getting polls. We're also letting Patreon members know what episode topics and cases we're covering. We're letting you guys know first. So that's another really great perk about Patreon. Please go check it out. Patreon.com/shakenanddisturbed, or you can check the link in the show notes. Any contribution that you can make towards our Patreon really does truly help keep the show going, and we really appreciate it.
And subscribe to our YouTube.
That's right. Don't forget that, too. Darren, let's get back to the show, though. This is getting juicy. Donna's
snitching, man. Donna's being like, oh, you need this? Oh, you want his tissues? Oh, you want his shampoo? I got you. So during
your
interview.
You want his fingernail clippings?
Yeah, she's like, I got the DNA. During our interview, Donna first told police that Paul had not left their home at all on the evening of Carolyn's death. However, she never changed her story when she remembered that Paul had gone for a walk around 10:45 that evening, returning about an hour later. As someone who does this,
that's right.
Also, it's really easy because I work from home and I go on walks for Nadine to be like, no, she was home all day. Like a walk doesn't feel like you're not at home.
Yeah.
You know
that's
what I mean?
And a quick little plug to our NMR episode where Darren and I just talked about how important walks are to your mental health.
Obviously. Now, according to Donna, when Paul got home from his walk, he had been exhausted, sweaty, and no longer wearing either his shoes or shirt. I've never been on a walk like that, let me tell you. I don't know how meditative that walk is. I've been exhausted from walks, you know, when I've like flown a little too close to the sun and like went a little too far and then had to come all the way back. Sweaty. Yeah. Very rarely. Certainly,
topless.
I'm wearing my shoes and shirt.
Yeah.
Pretty confident. I think I would remember that. But is summer in Tennessee. This is summer in Tennessee. Right?
Listen, I wouldn't put it past you to return home from a long walk without your shirt on. I'm just putting that out there. I just want you
to know.
The
best part would be if like Nadine never noticed. I come back, shoes just in like, hand, completely topless, and she's like, what's going on? You know, like, how's your day? And I'm like, oh, do you not notice that my boobs are out? Or nope. She's like, it's fine. Okay. I know you're laughing because I don't have them. Anyway. Donna stated.
This is going on YouTube. Hi, YouTube.
Donna stated that when she asked where his clothing had gone, Paul told her he'd been mugged. She told police that this is when she first noticed the scratches and bruising on her boyfriend's arms. Also feels weird that she changed her story. Because now it's not just a walk. He got mugged.
Now
that feels like something you would remember, though.
And especially with a town of less than 1,000 people, what are the odds that somebody's going to... I mean, I'm not saying it's never can never happen, but you're getting mugged in a small town in Tennessee? I don't know. Now,
at 10:45 at night when you're just like taking a walk, like... But again, for me, it's just the memory. It's just like, how would you forget that her boyfriend got mugged? That feels like a big life event.
Yeah,
if it was
just
a walk... I could kind of see forgetting it. Okay, so the evidence lab discovered stains on the jeans that were consistent with human blood. They also found that the denim fibers matched fibers found on Carolyn's body. And the semen sample taken from Carolyn's clothing was tested against Paul's DNA. The two samples were found to be of the same secretion type. This is not looking good for, I always want to say Paul Holes.
I know.
Paul
I kept
House.
Thinking that too. Shout out.
I'm
to
like,
Paul
he's
Holes.
Not this. He's actually a great investigator.
He's the opposite of this. Yes.
Yes. Now that they had plenty of circumstantial evidence against Paul, Tennessee police arrested him with Carolyn's murder. His prior conviction for aggravated sexual assault combined with the scratches bloodstains, semen sample, and the fact that he was literally at the location where her body was discovered all seem to kind of add up to this open and shut case. That feels right to me.
Feels right so far.
At trial, the prosecution presented all this incredibly damning, albeit circumstantial, evidence to the jury, who found that it was more than enough to find Paul guilty of murder. Now, to be fair, it is important to say it's circumstantial because A, he was in the area, doesn't necessarily pinpoint him to killing her. And yes, his semen was found on her. Doesn't mean that they didn't have sex. Doesn't mean that he murdered her. Also doesn't mean that he raped her. The fact that she was like this obviously implies something, but you know, in theory, in a world, he could have been meeting up with her to have this secret affair on this tryst. They had sex in the woods and then her husband found out and killed, you know, and whatever, and fought Paul. There's just a number of different circumstances that aren't necessarily beyond a reasonable doubt. So they presented all this evidence and it was more than enough to find Paul guilty of murder. But Paul's defense team did everything they could for their client. But the evidence against him was just too damning. And the attorney seemed to be at a loss to provide the jury reasonable doubt as to their Paul's guilt on this whole thing. Yeah. Now, Paul declined to testify on his own behalf. And in February of 1986, the court sentenced Paul to death. The judge provided his reasoning. Not only had he been previously convicted of a violent felony sexual assault, but Carolyn's murder appeared to come just after an even more violent sexual attack. Paul's defense team didn't give up and immediately began working on his appeal.
Yeah, so as they got to work, several witnesses actually came forth whose insights provided them some possible assistance. Although the police had never really considered Hubert a viable suspect, several of his female neighbors did. Now, remember, I was saying Paul's out here running around the neighborhood, hanging out. Well, one woman contacted the defense team to let them know that she'd seen Hubert hit Carolyn at a party one night shortly before her death. Obviously, that indicates some sort of domestic abuse at the very least there. Another woman stepped forward to let the attorneys know that Hubert had asked her to stay to say that they were together on the night of the 13th, although she hadn't actually seen him that night. So you see what he's doing here. He's potentially trying to make himself an alibi that is incorrect. Two more women came forward stating that Hubert had openly admitted to killing Carolyn one night at a party.
Now, so part of me is like, right now where Paul is he having a tryst with her and he's trying to hide it from Donna Turner, which is why his pants were at the bottom of the laundry. I don't know.
Well, understandably, these stories were enough to begin to cast doubt on the conviction, and the defense began to reinvestigate the evidence with help from the Innocence Project. No less. Yes. Together, they re-interviewed the medical examiner who told them that the blood from Paul's genes showed an unusual enzyme decay. Now, this decay is only evident when blood is taken from someone who is already dead and stored without preservatives. It is not ordinarily present in blood taken from someone alive. Further investigation determined that there had been, indeed been cross-contamination of the evidence samples and that Paul's genes had somehow come into contact with blood samples taken from Carolyn's body after she was found dead.
Okay, so someone is lying because he claimed he didn't see her when the search party came. He had nothing to do with it. And perhaps he didn't have anything to do with it, right?
Yeah.
But we do know that the semen match, like how did his semen get on there is also something I'm curious about.
That's the curious part. Well, the blood vials had not been properly sealed and the sample had come into contact with the genes. So maybe that's how this happens, Darren, during the 10-hour drive from Paul's home to the FBI lab.
You know, it's the 80s, John. They didn't seal blood vials then, John. This is the 80s.
It's the 80s, you guys. I don't know. This is getting a little far-fetched for me, but let's see how this pans out. Well, in fact, the FBI's records show a significant amount of blood missing from the vials upon arrival at the lab, but apparently nobody thought to check the evidence it had been transported with. And, you know, what comes to mind here is I'm assuming this isn't the only evidence that's getting transported to the FBI or even the only material in the car that's being transferred. So there's like, who's actually taken care of making sure nothing gets cross-contaminated with or even left behind?
The Watchmen. That's the Watchmen.
There you go.
Who watches the Watchmen?
Well, although this was helpful to his case, it was not enough to exonerate, and Paul remained incarcerated as his team continued working.
This is kind of crazy that it wasn't enough to at least exonerate him or at least get him off the death penalty, because that just seems wildly loaded to me. I mean, this doesn't even feel like fair in any sort of way, even if he was the one to do this. Now, a decade passes, right? So now we're in the late 90s. Less of an excuse for this type of bullshit.
The Spice Girls are out. Taking hold. The Spice World has arrived.
Yeah. Sopranos is on. Well, Seinfeld's finishing up. It's all very exciting.
Yada, yada, yada. But Spice World.
I was still collecting Beanie Babies. There's a lot going on.
That's right. There's a lot of things going on.
Not going on here.
Wink, wink. Yeah.
The Innocence Project assisted with getting additional DNA testing on the semen sample taken from Carolyn's clothing. Now, testing provided a match to the sample. The semen had come from Hubert.
Oh.
At trial, an FBI expert testified that the sample could only have come from Paul.
Right.
But the advancements in modern technology proved that this was actually completely untrue. This was the break Paul's defense team needed. And in 2005, they petitioned the court to overturn their client's conviction in light of the shocking new evidence.
Yeah.
After a year of waiting, the Innocence Project filed a second petition to the Supreme Court on Paul's behalf. The Supreme Court finally heard Paul's appeal on June 12th, 2006, so 20 years essentially after all this had gone down, at which time they determined that any reasonable juror would have been unlikely to find Paul guilty if they had been presented with this new information. The case was sent back to the Tennessee State Court for review, at which time Paul's conviction was overturned. The state had to either retry him within basically 180 days, six months.
With what evidence? Yeah.
Or released him. I mean, this was essentially what happened to Adnan. Either retry him or release him. The state fought this ruling, but they did lose. And Paul was released from prison on July 8th, 2008. By this time, he had spent over 22 years on death row and had developed a case of multiple sclerosis, and he was completely wheelchair bound. At the time of his release, he had appealed his case dozens of times, and his execution date was only days away. There isn't much information about Paul's whereabouts nowadays. As of 2014, he lived with his mother as he was unable to care for himself solo due to his illness. Hubert was never charged with his wife's murder, despite the extensive evidence against him. This is just, another thing of why the Innocence Project exists, but it also just goes to show how easy it is to kind of get convicted. And also to show the stigma that we have of former felons and former criminals in this country. Yeah. It was just easy to believe that he would have done this because years ago he, was tried for aggravated assault. I do believe, I mean, this is why I sort of believe in the Innocence Project. I sort of do believe in the rehabilitation of human beings. And I wish we didn't have such a stigma towards this all the time. This is why it's really hard for convicted felons once they serve their time to get jobs. I always give it up to, the weed industry has actually changed that. They have like a strain of weed now that's it has something to do with the amount of like incarcerated people that were incarcerated for nonviolent crimes, specifically Black and Brown people who have gotten sent to prison for this type of thing.
The worst sentencing.
Right. That they now have turned it around and can make a business out of themselves. And I'm glad that I'm glad we live in America where that is possible. But the stigma against criminals in this country, it's like, man, you are sometimes, and granted, not everyone deserves a second chance and not everyone can be rehabilitated, but I don't think we should make the assumption that no one can.
And the thing that really pops to me too, and I think you made all those great points, is, that at trial, that FBI expert testified that the sample could have only come from Paul. So what was the motivation behind that FBI expert? You know what I mean? I mean, was it truly bad science or?
Well, I think the technology at the time, I don't think that they could have really determined that it could have come from someone else, especially because they didn't have that decaying enzyme or whatever we were talking about in the blood. So anyway, obviously, let us know what you guys think at Carpe Darren, at Jay Thrasher. We want to get into some listener shout outs always. John, why don't you kick off a listener shout out this week?
Absolutely. I wanted to give a shout out to Robin on Patreon, who said, who DM'd us actually, Darren, and said, I am so excited for the new YouTube channel. I love you both so much. Heart. So thank you,
Robin.
We love you back. And we're going to wave to you on YouTube right now. Hi, Robin.
You're not dancing. You're not dancing on your own.
No, dancing. Robin. That's a good, I like that, Robin. Yeah.
Thank you.
I like this Robin though, too.
Thank you. We like all the Robins.
That's true. Yes.
Speaking of which, we got to shout out the latest subs to our channel. We try to catch everyone. So if you haven't been shouted out yet, let us know. Please DM us and be like, hey, we haven't been shouted out yet this week. We want to thank Steffi, Chloe, Kara or Kara, unclear how you pronounce it, Michael, Aileen Turley, as well as Tracy for the subs. That is very, very important. We really appreciate all of you for hitting subscribe.
Absolutely. And go smash our YouTube. Wait, what? We just launched our YouTube channel, if you didn't already know. And hopefully you'll join us. We would love to see you on YouTube.
If you want a shout out on the next episode, smash us now. We have full episodes. We're posting YouTube shorts, which are clips from the show. It's a good time for everyone, people. It's a good time.
Wait a minute. Smash us now. Is that our new YouTube slogan? You know
smash
what it just reminded me of?
Us. Now,
what was that home renovation show where they were like, move that bus? And then they would reveal like the whole new exterior of the home.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Was it a move that bus? Hold on.
Isn't it like move that bus? And they would pull the thing out of the way so that the homeowners could see their new renovated.
Extreme makeover?
Yes. Extreme makeover. That's not what you're getting on YouTube, but yeah.
Move
that bus. Yeah. Smash us now. Yeah. So go ahead and smash that subscribe bus.
Maybe that should be our sign off.
That's what I'm saying. Well, if you're watching this right now on YouTube, hi. Also, please like this video, share it, comment. It's youtube.com/@shakenanddisturbed. You do have to put that at sign in there for that to work, or you can just search for it or click the link in this week's show notes. That's right, Darren. I think we have to sign off together here with smash us
now.
All right. We'll see you guys next time. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.